You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Start to flame out this week. Fire officials are hopeful the cooler temperatures and a possible chance of rain in the mountains could help extinguish the fire.
Unfortunately, it's also going to bring higher winds, which will create some new challenges for us. However, the wind direction is probably not going to change much. We don't expect the fire to blow out in opposing direction.
Cal City Fire and Rescue spokesperson Brandon Vaccaro says the blaze is 40% contained after burning roughly 140,000 acres. Authorities in southern Utah now say 8 people are dead and 5 others missing following a flash flood. 2 cars had stopped in Hilldale and were washed downstream when flood waters rose too quickly for people in the cars to escape. At least one child is among the dead. A teacher at Mississippi's Delta State University suspected of killing a colleague and the woman he lived with is dead. Authorities say Shannon Lamb died of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound late yesterday. This is USA Headline News.
Bobby, you here again?
Yeah, my doctor told me to reduce stress at work, so I come to Buffalo Wild Wings to eat lunch and watch sports. I get to pick one of 7 entrees, like sandwiches and salads, plus one of 7 sides.
Well, I like sides.
It's so affordable, I can finally take a vacation.
Where are you going to go?
Here, Tim, here.
Introducing the new B-Dubs Fast Break Lunch Menu, starting at a new low price. Dine in or order takeout weekdays between 11 and 2. Participation and availability may vary. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Right now at the Home Depot, save 20% when you buy one or more pallets of in-stock GAF shingles. So, let's raise the roof and lower the cost with bulk pricing on top-of-the-line GAF shingles, including Timberline, America's favorite shingle. This is worth shouting from the rooftops. Let's do this. Save 20% on one or more pallets of in-stock GAF shingles at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Valid through September 30th, U.S. only. See store for details.
The NYPD and Secret Service say they are ready for next week's papal visit and United Nations General Assembly. Terry Sheridan has more.
After a tabletop exercise with partners from the Secret Service and FBI, NYPD Commissioner Bill Bratton says the visit of the Pope and President, along with the United Nations General Assembly, will be the largest security operation in the city's history.
We will have 170 confirmed world leaders in this city during the period of time of the General Assembly. That's 90% of the world leaders in this city at one time.
And while he wouldn't confirm that a plot against the Pope has already been broken up,
no credible threats directed against this event.
Mayor de Blasio says the city has never seen such an event. Terry Sheridan, New York.
NYPD Commissioner Bill Bratton also says, in addition to the largest security operation in the city's history, the department will be providing protection for the Pope, President Obama, and 170 heads of state attending the General Assembly. This is USA Headline News.
Hey, neighbor, it's me, that guy 2 desks away that never takes a sick day.
Seriously, you could always count on me to show up, even if I feel terrible. Which reminds me, I have the flu, and if you're one of the 63% of people that didn't get their flu shot, you can get it from me. You really should get a flu shot at Rite Aid, where you'll also get a free cold and flu protection plan to protect you from people like me. Another reason Rite Aid says with us, it's personal.
Flu vaccines available while supplies last. Age restrictions apply in some states. See pharmacist for details.
Donald Trump is looking forward to the next Republican debate. During a rally before thousands of people at American Airlines Center in Dallas, Trump highlighted the latest poll numbers.
The polls come out, and we're really killing it. We are killing it.
Trump remarked the silent majority has now become an aggressive, noisy, wanting-to-win majority. Trump said that he likes his fellow candidates Ben Carson and Carly Fiorina, but he didn't believe they would be able to do as good a job as president as he would. Trump said that he'll unveil a tax plan in the coming weeks that'll be pro-growth and reduce taxes in order to reduce American investment overseas. He says he's enjoying proving the pundits wrong.
One person, a real loser, said, "He's a clown! He's a clown!" Now they're saying, "Oh, how do we stop this guy? No more clown." I haven't heard the word clown in a while.
Donald Trump said the term silent majority doesn't really apply anymore.
Maybe we should call it the noisy, the aggressive, the wanting to win. Wanting to win. majority. That's what it is.
Amazon founder Jeff Bezos is in Florida this morning to announce that he'll be bringing his Blue Origins rocket company to Cape Canaveral. The company's new rockets will be processed, assembled, and launched from the Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. The Atlanta Falcons got two touchdowns from wide receiver Julio Jones on their way to a 26-24 win over the Philadelphia Eagles in the first of a Monday Night Football doubleheader. In the nightcap, Carlos Hyde ran for 168 yards and two touchdowns as the 49ers dropped the Minnesota Vikings 20-3. I'm Ron Taylor, and you're listening to USA Headline News.
This is Jeannie Aversa, CRPC, financial advisor at Patton Hyde & Associates. Do you have questions about your retirement, like will your money last throughout your lifetime? Will you have enough to live the life you want? And when will you be able to retire? If so, you're not alone. As a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., Patton Hyde & Associates can help you find the answers with the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach. We'll work with you one-to-one to understand your goals and discuss the four key areas of retirement, including covering your essentials, lifestyle, protection, and legacy needs. From there, we'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap with clear steps you can take to help you retire on your terms. Call Patton Hyde & Associates today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor.
ChamberRadio.com. I'm your host, Chris Bianco. Well, I'm the principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Blue Panther Business Partners offers practical advice, hands-on assistance to the business owner who never has time to improve his or her business. We do that by accomplishing their wish list. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology so that consumers seeking solutions for personal or business use can be better informed when making purchasing decisions or hiring individuals to carry out those technological decisions. Each week, I will focus on topics about technology. Segments will include news, the latest apps, buying advice for hardware and software, answering your questions. To contact me during the show, go to Tech Today on Facebook. Email me at goodmorning@100chamberradio.com. Phone number here, 908-237-0410. Or to contact me outside of the show, go to bluepantherbiz.com. Well, welcome to another edition of Tech Today on HuntChamberRadio.com. Lots of things to talk about. The big news, I guess, last week was Apple. Apple had their unveiling that they do, and Apple TV, which I had explained was going to be a big event and a big unveiling, took place. And so there's some articles that we'll be talking about today about all that and other things as well. If you're not an Apple devotee, well, then we have other things to talk about. For those of you that are Apple loyalists, well, you'll be happy and not so happy. Depends on, it's all just conjecture at this point until you actually see the products on their way. But let's get started with it. iPhone is coming. Another version of it. Sprint's plan for the new iPhone trumps other U.S. carriers. Written by Devika Krishna Kumar of Reuters and published on Yahoo.com on September 11th, it says, "Want to own the new iPhone without burning a hole in your pocket every month? Sprint seems to be the cheapest option in the United States. Sprint's Core offers the 16-gig iPhone 6S with a basic data calling and text plan and costs between $3 and $10.50 less per month than a competing offer from its top three U.S. carriers. The competition in the U.S. wireless industry is fierce, and the launch of the newest iPhone iteration on Wednesday is a chance for carriers to lure customers away from their rivals. But Apple served up a curveball by offering its own financing scheme for an unlocked iPhone, which gives a customer the liberty to switch between carriers rather than be tied down by a contract with one carrier. However, Sprint's plan works out to be cheaper on a per-month basis than even buying the iPhone from Apple and going for the cheapest wireless plan on offer. Sprint is charging $22 per month for the 16-gig iPhone 6S under a 21-month lease. That, along with a basic talk, text, and data plan worth $45, will cost a customer $67 per month. A T-Mobile U.S. Inc. plan, similar to Sprint's, will cost $70 per month, $20 for the phone with an 18-month agreement, and $50 for a basic wireless plan. Sprint and T-Mobile usually offer cheaper plans to lure customers from Verizon and AT&T, respectively. The top two U.S. wireless companies, which analysts say have better networks. Verizon's plan costs about $77.08 per month, $27.08 for the iPhone over the 2 years, and $50 for a wireless plan. AT&T's plan, Next 12, costs about $77.50 per month, $32.50 for the 20-month phone contract, $45 for a wireless plan. Under Apple's offer, the iPhone 6S will cost $32.41 per month, paired with a basic $45 wireless plan. Among the cheapest available, the phone would cost $77.41 per month. And what when a new iPhone is launched? Sprint allows users to upgrade every time a new iPhone is launched, which typically happens once every year, and charges an activation fee. T-Mobile allows a free upgrade at any time, while AT&T offers the option of a free upgrade after 12 months. Verizon's plan also permits an upgrade at any time, but requires customers to pay off the remaining cost of the phone. Still, there are advantages in opting for Apple's financing plan. Apple's scheme includes Apple Care Plus, which is a warranty program that provides 2 years of hardware protection instead of the standard 1 year, as well as coverage for two incidents in cases of accidental damage. So you're kind of paying for insurance. You got to kind of, if you're going to get the real answer to this cost averaging equation, you have to throw insurance in there. And if you throw insurance in there, it might work out that Apple's plan is cheaper. If you feel that you are going to roll the dice and go with a carrier and believe that you're not going to drop your phone or crack it or what have you, well then, certainly the Sprint plan or the T-Mobile plan might be your choice. However, you still have to, and I've talked about this ad nauseum, but I do want to make sure I explain it again. You have to figure out where your home coverage is. You then have to figure out where your work coverage is. And you have to figure out where you're frequenting often. And if you're having dead spots because of the carrier, regardless of who it is, you can't choose that carrier. You can get the cheaper price, but you just don't get the value because you're not using it. And you're sitting there frustrated with it. So you have to make sure that everything works in your favor. So if it happens to work that way and you feel that you've won out because you can get the Sprint plan and it's going to work for you, that's awesome. But if you happen to be in Hunterdon County and Sprint is not going to work for you, or T-Mobile's not going to work for you, you're going to have to choose Verizon or AT&T, and you're going to have to pay the extra money. It's just going to have to be. So there you have it. But iPhone 6 is out there, and everybody's competing. What else do we have going on? Well, we've talked all about security and hacking and stuff like this. Interesting article here from Wired.com, and it says it's written by Kevin Hartnett on Science, September 13th, and he says the near-perfect computer security may be surprisingly close. So he says, in July 2013, a pair of studies set the cryptography world on fire. They were posted within days of one another in an online archive where researchers share their work, and together they described a powerful new method for hiding the secrets inside software programs. The method was called indistinguishability, obfuscation, or IO. The authors touted it as central hub for all cryptography, a unified basis upon which to reconstruct familiar cryptographic tools like public keys and selectively secure signatures. The papers also took a first stab at demonstrating what IO might look like mathematically. The research produced a flurry of interest at the time, but in the 2 years since the announcement, computer science researchers have encountered a number of practical challenges that stand in the way of using IO. For one thing, IO is extraordinarily slow. Obfuscating a program adds delays that would be measured not in minutes or hours, but in lifetimes. In addition, the method is not nearly as mathematically secure as it needs to be. But in the past few months, a number of studies have provided some of the most important advances since the 2013 announcement. Some researchers now think we could get working a system in a decade or maybe even sooner than that. As of right now, it seems like there are no big limitations, said Amit Sahi, a computer scientist at the University of California, Los Angeles, who was a co-author on both of the papers. IO is powerful and can do almost anything we've ever wanted it to do. And if IO can be constructed in terms of certain simple mathematical assumptions, researchers believe that even a quantum computer couldn't break it. A mountain of small steps is required. Indistinguishability obfuscation begins by positing two programs that compute the exact same outputs by different methods. For example, the equivalent functions of x times a plus b, or ax plus bx. From any set of three inputs, a, b, and x, each program produces the same result as the other, but arrives at a different result by the different path. IO says that given two equivalent programs, it should be possible to encrypt them so that users cannot tell which version they have, no matter how much they poke around. The 2013 papers convinced many people that IO has the power to dramatically broaden the scope of cryptography, but the studies didn't specify how to make the idea practical. Researchers have two primary challenges. First, to speed up the process, and second, to ensure that IO is secure. IO would be comically impractical to use today. Any encryption scheme is going to slow down a program at least a little. In the case of IO, the mountain of equations needed to achieve indistinguishability slows things down a lot. It probably takes hundreds of years to obfuscate and run a program, said Vinod Vinkuntantham, a cryptographer at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology who has been heavily involved in IO research. When it becomes that ridiculous, you stop caring about the exact numbers. One general strategy taken by computer scientists is to speed up running times has been to reduce obfuscating one large program to obfuscating connected smaller programs. As computer scientists envision it, obfuscating a program could require two steps. Improvements in either step could increase efficiency overall. Researchers have made more progress on these steps. Once the bootstrapping program is in place, the challenge is to obfuscate longer and more varied programs of computations. At the annual Symposium on Theory of Computing in Portland, Oregon, in June, three teams of researchers presented work that demonstrates how to go from obfuscating any single circuit, which researchers already knew how to do in theory, to obfuscating a general-purpose computer or Turing machine in the eyes of theoretical computer scientists. So it's a big leap, and it turns out that it's going to be some time. But here's the thing. It turns out that we have a process. We have a concept that we can put in place. They have a theory. And, you know, I go back to, 1980s. I was playing, I forget which video game it was. It was 3D graphics. You would fly this plane over a 3D city. And when I talked to the computer scientists at that particular time, they told me, this is it. We've maxed it out. There's no way to make a computer do any better with graphics. And now we have virtual reality. Another thing that happened when I was a computer science student, I was writing a program in which you could move around furniture in a two-dimensional room, so you could basically show a floor plan and move the furniture around. And I was told, that's it. We've maxed it out. This is the best that we can do. And the same time, I was working with an Apple Macintosh, and it had a version of, for lack of a better word, Windows. It was before Windows actually existed. But that was it. Again, you'd hear the same thing. We've maxed it out. And last but not least, in the 1990s, I recall seeing the first time that video was being projected on the internet, and it was very grainy and stuttery, and again, we heard the same thing. We've maxed it out. There's no way to do it. Well, here we're hearing the same thing yet again, 20 years later, on a completely different event, which is cryptography, but it won't be long before there's a breakthrough, and they've figured out a way. It's just that they're working on it right now, but the good news is they're working on it, and the only other problem is that usually when they're working on something like this, chances are what they thought was in fact a theory that can't be broken, eventually it can be broken. We were working on codes years ago that could never be broken because they were so complex, and now they're getting broken little tongue in cheek, but you could probably break them with the computer that runs a cell phone nowadays. So understand that we're still working on it, and that as we're in a cycle, and as we continue to find more security holes, they're going to keep working on better security processes. And the fact that they're working on it right now means that we're in the right direction. We're at the first quarter of our show. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more of Tech Today in just a moment. Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com. Mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
If you're looking to get in front of thousands of new customers, connect with your current customers, you don't want to miss out on the largest business show in Hunterdon County. The 27th annual Hunterdon County Business and Home Expo, coming up on a new date, Thursday, November 5th, in a new location at Hunterdon Central High School in Flemington at the Fieldhouse in Common from 2 to 7 p.m. You surely want to sign up. You surely want to exhibit. Something you don't want to miss. Contact the Chamber at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at hunterdonchamber.org.
Hi, I'm Sharon Skibbe of CompuPay Payroll. The Chamber is a great way to connect to other businesses within Hunterdon County and build strong and lasting business relationships.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disitel, ceremony officiant with CelebrationOfALifetime.com. I joined the Chamber so I can get to know you and what you're all about, and I hope you want to get to know me and what I'm all about. Then we can celebrate what we can do to make Hunterdon County better.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time. Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand, or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingtonChamberRadio.com app today.
If you're looking to get in front of thousands of new customers, connect with your current customers, you don't want to miss out on the largest business show in Hunterdon County. The 27th annual Hunterdon County Business and Home Expo, coming up on a new date, Thursday, November 5th, in a new location at Hunterdon Central High School in Flemington at the Fieldhouse and Common from 2 to 7 p.m. You surely want to sign up. You surely want to exhibit. Something you don't want to miss. Contact the Chamber at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at huntertonchamber.org.
All right, welcome back to Tech Today on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. We talked a little bit at the beginning of the show about the unveiling that Apple had done regarding their iPhone. We also talked last week about the unveiling of the Apple TV. Well, now we're getting some of the details, and here is one of them. Dante Orazio on the 13th reported on The Verge that Plex is on its way to Apple TV. Well, you might be surprised, but chances are you don't even realize that you might have the ability to use Plex regardless of Apple TV right now. But Apple TV might have just won itself a few more fans. Plex, the popular service for organizing and streaming your personal movie and music collection, is finally coming to Apple's home theater device. Co-founder Scott Olukiewicz is confirmed as much to IT World this week following Apple's announcement that it's opening the platform to third-party apps with its latest model, Apple TV. In a statement, the co-founder said, "We are very excited to have a crack at bringing our users Apple TV," he added. "It's been a long-requested platform, and we're excited to work on it. We want it, our users want it, and we're anxiously awaiting the TV OS developer beta of info so we can finally dig in." Olukiewicz also notes that he doesn't expect any stumbling blocks along the way. Apple TV should get a fully featured Plex app. Of course, it will take some time before the team can develop the app and ship it to users. There's no word yet on when that might be, but at least you can take comfort in knowing that someday you won't have to jailbreak your Apple TV to install a sneaky workaround to stream your digital movies across your home with Plex. And Plex, what it does is basically allows you to have an Apple TV, but then send it out to other devices in your home network. So, I have been using Kodi for years, and it's the same problem. You had to buy old Apple TVs, and there was a way to jailbreak the old Apple TVs and put Kodi on it. But it sounds like, and we'll have to see the devil in the details here, but it sounds like Apple TV is making itself available for third-party type apps, Plex being one of them. Perhaps Kodi will be one of them. And if that's the case, wow, that's going to be pretty cool. Now, you all know that Apple TV has the gaming as well. So now you have the streaming ability, the streaming throughout your home network, and you could have potentially the ability to stream many movies by grabbing all the different apps and streaming services that are out there. Who else is in bed with one another? Well, Microsoft is using Android apps as a mobile testbed. Dieter Bohn on the 13th reported on The Verge that the past Friday, Business Insider revealed that Microsoft has acquired Double Labs, a small shop that makes an Android app screen replacement called Echo Notification Lock Screen. That seems like a weird thing to do because Microsoft's Garage Labs already makes a similar app called Next Lock Screen. But if you look at what Microsoft has been doing on Android, especially with Garage Labs, it actually makes sense, or a little bit of sense. The key is that Microsoft is trying to experiment with a lot of different ideas on mobile instead of betting the farm on some big concept like it did with Windows 8. So it has its own lock screen on Android that focuses on showing contextuality, relevant apps, and faster access to stuff like making conference calls. Echo is slightly different. It lets you only wake the screen for prioritized apps and snooze those notifications for later. Both are sets of good ideas for your lock screen, but combining them could end up being a mess. But that's not the goal anyway. Instead, Microsoft apparently wants to see how users interact with these apps for its own research, not just to create the one true Android lock screen app yet. What it learns there could make it back to its core products like Windows 10 or Outlook. Microsoft's Julie Larson Green spoke to Business Insider about the strategy, and it makes sense that her company needs to balance being conservative with its business customers while being innovative in the mobile space. By trying a lot of stuff on Android, Microsoft gets to do both. So Microsoft is starting to learn. They're innovating again. That's pretty neat because they've been a stick in the mud for quite some time. And Google has definitely been the innovative entrepreneur. And whereas Apple has been very stoic in how they only do certain things, they're starting to open up their doors and allow other apps in. Microsoft is starting to try and learn from Google. And vice versa, Google wants to make sure that everything is working because there's a lot of folks out there that still like the way certain Microsoft products work. And so everybody's starting to learn again. It's a very innovative time. Pretty neat. Well, who else is trying to learn? Well, Comcast is trying to learn. Fool.com reports that Comcast is testing a new way for customers to avoid data caps. The company insists it doesn't have them, but it rose by any other name. Despite its efforts to improve its reputation, Comcast continues some less than consumer-friendly practices, such as capping data for its broadband customers. The company, of course, doesn't call its policy data caps. In fact, it goes out of its way to tell people it doesn't cap data while explaining its practices that either limit data after a certain amount has been used or charge them more for exceeding the threshold. Okay. Quote, there isn't a cap anymore. We're out of the cap business, Executive Vice President David Cohen told Arts Technica on May 2012. After dropping a policy that could cut off people's service after they used 250 gig in a month. Comcast's then new approach was touted as effectively offer unlimited usage of our services because customers will have the ability to buy as much data as they want. It's all semantics. And now the company is offering customers in Florida the ability to pay $30 a month for unlimited data, which effectively allows them to buy their way around data caps, the company says, don't exist. So the company's data caps aren't universal. They're being tested in a number of markets, and the rules vary slightly in each. In a broad sense, Comcast offers users 250 to 300 gig of data as part of their monthly plan. If they exceed that number, their access is either shut off or they can pay an additional fee for more data, generally $10 for 50 gig. Comcast, to its credit, hasn't been aggressively enforcing the caps and has, in most cases, allowed customers to exceed the cap for 3 months before charging a penalty. Still, the company did tell investors at the 2014 event that it had plans to expand its data caps, which it insists are not data caps, across the entire territory. I would predict that in 5 years, Comcast at least would have a usage-based billing model rolled out across its footprint, Cohen said. At the time of that event, Cohen did tell ARS that the company may raise the not-a-cap number and that 98% of our customers nationally don't use 300 gig a month. So why offer an unlimited option? The new plan, being quietly tested in Florida, offers unlimited data for an extra $30 a month. But it's hard to see whom that makes sense for. If most users don't exceed the threshold anyway, and extra data costs $10 for 50 gig, are there really consumers using over 150 gig beyond their 300 gig allotment on a regular basis? The company laid out on the FAQ page a scenario in which the unlimited plan makes sense. And here it is, quote, for an example, if you enroll in the unlimited data option and use 530 gig in a given month, you will only be charged $30 for choosing to enroll in the unlimited data option. If you do not enroll in the unlimited data option, You would be on a 300 gig plan and therefore would be charged $50 for an additional 250 gig. Five blocks of additional 50 gig provided on top of the 300 gig plan. Note that customers enrolled in the universal data option who use less than 300 gig in a given month will still be charged $30 per month. That scenario makes sense if you regularly go over 250 gig, technically over 150 gig each month is the breaking point. But that has to apply to very few people. It's a very niche clientele, said the company, and may have been better off not offering the unlimited deal rather than calling attention to its data limits, which, away, again, it insists are not caps, that few people will be affected by. Comcast has either solved a problem that doesn't exist or has found a new way to make money from people worried that they will exceed limits that they aren't even likely to approach. Comcast should drop all of this. If most customers don't exceed their data allotments, then Comcast should drop the caps and consider a more consumer-friendly way to handle network abusers. Perhaps the company should simply target people who consistently use well more data than the average customer. While consumers don't like the idea of data caps and mentioning them causes a public relations nightmare, people are less likely to be outraged if people are taking advantage of the system are being held in check. If less than 2% of the users, and probably well less than that, regularly exceed the norm of a massive amount, people aren't likely to push back if the company takes more enforcement steps. So here's the bottom line, folks. You have to go and see what type of data you're using. Now, you can go out to, I'm sure, to Comcast or any of your particular internet service provider and see how much data you use. And you should obviously monitor it. But I get the sense that they're exactly right. Comcast might be talking you into the world of unlimited. And I went through this with the phone world, the smartphone world, when Verizon had unlimited data and eventually started to enforce a cap of what used to be 8 gig or 2 gig per phone on your plan. Now it's up to 10 gig for the same price. It went up to 12 gig for the same price, and now I think I'm paying for 15 gig the same price. So it's almost doubled. So where I used to only have to worry about 10 gig for my phone, now I have to worry about 4 gig for my phone. When Verizon was making that change, everybody freaked out. They said, oh my God, I'm going to lose my unlimited plan. And some people actually didn't even upgrade because they didn't want to lose that unlimited plan. But when you broke down the numbers and you looked at your actual usage, and I did the same, I noticed that I wasn't even coming close to that 8 gig at the time. So going from the unlimited plan to the 8 gig data plan that Verizon was offering for a cheaper price was a better deal. And Comcast is going in the reverse. They're sitting there saying, hey, pay $30 more and then we don't have to worry about it. But in terms of actually how much you use it, you might turn out that you don't use it enough. And all you're doing is giving Comcast an extra $30. So the bottom line is this. Get your information, do your research, go and speak to your Comcast, whatever your ISP is, if it happens to be Comcast, go to your Comcast account. Look at how much data you're using, and then see if that $30 is worth it. What it's telling you is you'd have to use close to 450 gig a month for 3 months each month for it to be worth it to go and buy the $30 extra that Comcast is offering. All right, so don't be hoodwinked by a marketing ploy. Get your information and find out how it applies to your usage. All right, we're going to take another break, and we'll do the news and weather. We'll be back with more of Tech Today in just a few minutes. Thank you. Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today. All right, welcome back to Tech Today on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Lots of things still to talk about. The world of Google. Let's go over there and find out what they've got to say. We talked to talked about Microsoft and Apple. How about the world of Google? Well, here's an interesting article by Five Things You Should Never Search on Google. Jess Bulliott on September 12th wrote this on CheatSheet.com, and Jess says, if you use Google, Bing, Yahoo, or any other search engine that records your IP address and search terms, there are some things, many things, it turns out, that you really shouldn't search. Google, for instance, can combine your search history with more data about your identity and associate them with a full profile that both the search engine and the advertisers can use to get an idea of who you are, what you're interested in, and what you're most likely to buy. That should make you think twice about sharing your problems, your interests, and even inquiries born out of idle curiosity with a major search engine like Google. If it isn't true that you are searched for anything you want, delete your browsing history and no one will know that you were reading. Google records what you search and uses that information to figure out how to target ads specifically to you. So it's not just Google that knows exactly what you're searching. As Google explains in its privacy in terms FAQs, quote, when you click on a search result in Google search, your web browser also may send the internet address or URL of the search results page to the destination web page as the HTTP refer. The URL of the search results page may sometimes contain search query you entered. You might not think that the URL of a page contains a whole lot of useful information until you consider an example like WebMD page for an STD or website for your hometown. Even just for the ads displayed on Google search, Google uses information on what you searched for, your location, and the time of day to choose ads. It also takes into account your previous web searches, your Google web history, your history of visiting websites that advertise with Google, information from your Google account like your age and gender, and your previous interactions with Google's ads and search results. With all that in mind, read on for five things that you shouldn't ever search for when using Google. So here we go. These are the five things you should never search for when you're on Google or any of the other search engines for that matter. Don't search for things that clue Google into your location. So the first one is, as Jay Stanley reported last year for the ACLU, one of the earliest instances in which the powerful privacy implications of having your search history recorded occurred in 2006 when AOL released a large set of searches that had been conducted on its sites. While the identity of the searcher was replaced with an arbitrary number, so that all the searches by an individual were still gathered around the same identifier, members of the media found that it wasn't difficult to identify a searcher's hometowns, neighborhoods, age, sex, and other identifying details through their searches. The result was an electrifying sense of just how intimate and revealing the search information was when shared with a search engine can be. About a year ago, New York Times columnist Dave Leonhard told NPR about how search items differ geographically, with major differences between counties where life is easiest and counties where life is hardest. A high prevalence of searches on health problems like blood sugar and diabetes, searches on what might be called the dark side of religion, searches about selling Avon or getting Social Security checks, and searches about specific kinds of guns, occurs in areas where people are more likely to struggle with money or suffer health problems. Your searches give your search engine a view of how economic trends manifest themselves in your everyday life, something you might not want advertisers capitalizing on. Don't search for information on medical issues or drugs. While Google says that it prohibits advertisers from remarketing based on sensitive information, such as health information or religious beliefs, the company's privacy policy reserves the right to record your search results, associate them with your IP address or Google account, and then use that information to target ads on Google properties and across the web. Neil Ungerfelder recently reported that researchers have found looking up medical and drug information online is a major privacy risk. Tim Liebert, a doctoral student at the University of Pennsylvania Annenberg School for Communication, found that more than 90% of 80,000 health-related pages he looked at exposed user information to third parties. The pages he researched included commercial, nonprofit, educational, and government websites, and the finding is particularly unsettling, giving a Pew Research Center finding that 72% of Internet users in the United States look up health-related information online. Even worse, Google collects information from 78% of the pages that Liebert looked at, which gives advertisers an easy way to figure out what a user has specific health issues and find out what issues those are. Visits to the page on HIV or AIDS, for instance, can be combined with a user's browsing history and led to ads for HIV/AIDS treatments, which Ungerlelder notes effectively outs their HIV issues and status. Bigger privacy issue, Liebert worries, are leaks that could expose people's intimate health information to anyone willing to buy a hacked database. Stolen health medical records are routinely trafficked on criminal websites and are often used by Medicaid fraud and other scams. Third parties could match you with your medical search results, and advertisers could even discriminate against you based on your medical searches, even if they're never connected to you definitively. Don't give your search engine hints about your insecurities. Advertising is notoriously formulated to create and capitalize upon viewers' insecurities. Giving your search engine and all the advertisers that leverage the information it collects on you easy access to the insecurities you already have just does the dirty work for them, making things easier for advertisers who want to capitalize on your insecurities to sell you products and services doesn't sound like a huge deal compared to what happens when you search for medical information, but it still has some unsettling effects that you should avoid if you can. Amanda Hess recently reported for The Slate that a category of search she's dubbed Google Am I Normal is a scintillating resource for advertisers, Hess explains. I've been tipping Google off to all the real elements and imagined insecurities that I already have at a pace of about once an hour. Every hour of the day, celebrity diet, pants are uncomfortable, migraine difficulty speaking, before and after plastic surgery, and worst cramps ever why. Each of those gives an uneasy feeling to an advertiser who don't want to have to show you an ad first to get you to think about your insecurities and how their products might help. It may not seem like a big deal compared to having ads about treatments for illness you may have or may not have following you after the internet, but if you don't want to see ads that are specifically tailored to things that you already don't like about your body, even if objectively they aren't a huge deal, you should avoid sharing those insecurities with your search engine in the first place. Don't search for anything suspicious, especially at work. A couple of years ago, a story on how a series of Google searches led to a visit by local authorities made the rounds. As Jared Newman reported for Time, searches by different members of a New York family for terms including backpack, pressure cooker bomb, triggered a visit by local authorities when the suspicious Google searches were reported by an employer. Michael Cantalano, the matriarch of the family in question, later wrote, quote, I had researched pressure cookers. My husband was looking for a backpack, and maybe in another time those two things together would have seemed innocuous. But we are in these times now, she continued, and in these times, when things like the Boston bombing happen, you spend a lot of time on the internet reading about it And if you are my exceedingly curious news junkie 20-year-old son, you click a lot of links when you read the myriad of stories. You might just read CNN piece about how bomb-making instructions are readily available on the Internet, and you'll all probability, if you are the kid, click the link provided. The lesson learned? Don't search for suspicious terms or anything that could be construed as crime-related. When someone is watching your browsing history, the safest course of action is to assume that someone always is. On a similar note, it's a bad idea to search anything crime-related if you have something to hide. Obviously, we don't condone committing a crime, but it's worth noting that people's Google searches have been used to convict them of crimes, especially when they just happen to Google the crime right before or after they're committed. So this happened in Palo Alto case as an example, or read the Lee Rowlands report on how a New York case highlighted the problem with finding someone guilty of a conspiracy or attempt to commit a crime when the only evidence in words shared online. It's one thing to use Google search as evidence of intent to knowledge, but when an actual crime was resulted and there's a real victim. And fifth, don't Google anything that enables Google to define your identity. If you're really serious about finding a way around Google's propensity for constructing a profile to define you, who you are and how much you're worth in specific advertisers, then there's not much recourse out to avoid searching anything that could give Google or advertisers a clue about your identity. Jeffrey Rosen reported to the New York Times a few years ago, the privacy threats go beyond creepy. Computers can link our digital profiles with our real identities so precisely that it will soon be hard to claim that the profiles are anonymous in any meaningful sense, Rosen said. Paul Ohm, a law professor at the University of Colorado at Boulder, told the Times that companies can combine hundreds of thousands of facts about you into what he terms a database of ruin. With discrete and unconnected facts about you, an algorithm could sort through profiles of hundreds of thousands of users like you and accurately predict something unrelated about you or your activity. Ohm argues that there is at least one closely guarded secret that could lead to harm if revealed, like a medical condition, family history, or personal preference. And the database of ruin makes the secret hard to conceal. Even if any classifications are inaccurate, there can still harm you with effects like price discrimination, in which companies profile you and determine how much to charge you for goods or services, Rosen reports. The new world of price discrimination is one where it's hard to escape your consumer profile, and you won't even know if companies are offering discounts to higher status customers in the first place. He imagines that as personalization becomes ubiquitous, the segmented profiles that advertisers, publishers, and even presidential candidates use to define us may become more pervasive and significant than the identities we use to define ourselves. So if you're looking to minimize the amount of information that search engines and advertisers collect on you, there are a few steps that you should take. Choose an alternative search engine, like DuckDuckGo, to keep your search history from being recorded and analyzed. Install an extender like AdBlock Plus, Ghostery, or Disconnect to protect yourself against companies who want to track your activity online. Check your privacy settings on popular sites, and always log out of social networks when you're browsing the web. And I would add this one. There's another browser out there. It's called Tor. T-O-R. It's not exactly robust right now, but it is out there. And one of the things that it does is it constantly uses a different IP address. So that when you are doing your searches, it's not going to connect the same IP address with the same data all the time, and it's going to be obscure. So lots of stuff out there, and Big Brother is watching, and you need to be prepared for that, so you need to do things in a more appropriate fashion. What else do we have? Well, if you wear glasses like Google invent, this Google invention may change your life. So maybe you could search on Google Glasses. Brad Reed on September 13th reported on Yahoo Tech that Google Glass may have been a dud out, but that doesn't mean Google is done making our glasses smarter. One called Quartz, QURTZ draws our attention to a new patent awarded to Google this week that should potentially solve problems that have plagued people who wear glasses for centuries. The technology outlined in Google's patent describes using motion sensors and tiny motors that will automatically detect where your head is angled and adjust the glasses so they'll stay fitted to the bridge of your nose. In Google's idea, the new glasses would have an actuator, a little motor for controlling movement in each arm that could bend the arms in or out as needed, rather than the way a bendy straw works, Quartz explains. When the glasses detect that their wearer is bobbing up and down at an increased rate while running, for example, the arms contract to grip the wearer's head. This sounds very cool, but how exactly would these glasses be powered? Quartz report doesn't say, although from the look of the diagram in the patent filing, it seems this particular invention was designed specifically for future Google Glass-type devices. In other words, it sounds like these kinds of smart glasses are just one more gadget you'll have to charge at the end of the day, along with your laptop, smartphone, and smartwatch. Hooray! Well, it sounds pretty cool, but I don't know. Most of the time we're able to deal with it. We've been dealing with it for years. But then again, you know, as soon as you have something that you've never had before, you say, oh, how did I go with it? How did I live without it for all this time? So they're going to have this available. Perhaps it'll be available for regular glasses. Perhaps it'll be available for when Google does, in fact, show up with some more Google Glass prototypes. Who knows? Finishing up the third quarter of our show, we're going to do a station ID, and we will be back with more of Tech Today in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Did you know that 48% of executives see the golf course as an ideal business environment? 93% said playing golf with a business associate is a good way to establish a closer relationship. This September, bring your business to the green and join us for our 2015 Golf Classic. This year's event will take place on Monday, September 21st at Copper Hill Country Club with a 9 a.m. shotgun start. Don't miss this annual event, which includes exciting contests, a networking luncheon, and award ceremony that will present the winning foursome with the Hunterdon Cup. For more details, please visit www.hunterdonchamber.org or call the Chamber at 908-782-7115.
USA Headline News, I'm Ron Taylor. A student died today following a crash involving a school bus in Houston. KPRC-TV reports the bus barreled over the railing of I-610 South Loop just after 7 local time this morning. Four students and the driver were rushed to the hospital for treatment of injuries. The crumpled bus was left on its side after apparently falling from an overpass. Detectives in Monmouth County, New Jersey, are trying to figure out who would shoot a young man not far from his old